From WXXI News, this is Connections, broadcasting from WEOS Finger Lakes Public Radio in Geneva. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made in June of 1941 when the U.S. War Department knocked down the doors of about 135 families living in Romulus, New York, near Seneca Lake. The government wanted to construct a weapons storage facility, and the land they wanted to use essentially belonged to those families. Well, about 5 months later, the department built the Seneca Army Depot, or Depot, depending on who you talk to. Don't come after us. We're going to go with Depot this hour. But regardless, here's what they did. They enclosed this within a 24-mile fence. More than 8,000 people from across the country came to work within that fence over the years, many of them living in deplorable conditions, chicken coops or apple sheds. And the area also became home to several dozen white-tailed deer. White deer, not albino deer. White deer. The fence protected them from hunters and predators, and that population grew. The white deer herd soon became the world's largest population of white deer. The depot and the deer remained active through several wars: World War II, the Korean War, Vietnam, even Desert Storm in the early 1990s. It was officially shut down in 2000. But now, after 70 years, the site is once again open to the general public. People around the world can visit the relics of the secret weapons storage facility. They can see the white deer in their natural habitat. It's all part of the new White Deer Tours, hosted by Seneca White Deer, Inc. And joining us today here at WEOS in studio is the president of that organization, Dennis Money. Dennis, welcome back to the program.
Oh, thank you very much, Evan.
Also here is Jeff Shipley. He's president of the Seneca County Chamber of Commerce. Jeff, welcome to you as well.
Well, thank you.
And
Jeff, pleasure to be here.
You've been on one of these tours. So have we.
I have. It was amazing. It was absolutely amazing. I think it's just incredible that Dennis's vision. I met with Dennis about 10 years ago now, almost, and exactly his vision is coming to reality, and that's what those tours are the epitome of. It's exactly what Dennis, I think, has mapped out all those years ago. That's what he got involved in this cause for, and it's just a great honor to be a part of this and watch it happening and be able to offer this to our visiting public.
They launched these tours during the most beautiful month of the year, gray November, just about 11 days ago, and still, even launching this time of year, Dennis Money, in your first 10 days of tours, you had more than 1,000 people?
That's correct. We're delighted with the outpouring of support.
All right, so the tours are happening now, and through at least the month of December, you can go, but make sure you book in advance here. It's $30 for adults, $27 if you're part of the military, or seniors. For children 5 to 17 years old, it's $15, and under that age, it is free. And the tours are going to run Thursday through Sunday, Thursday and Friday. They're going to run at 8, 10, noon, and 2, and Saturday and Sunday, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 1, and 2. And Dennis, I thought you did all of the tours, and turns out you don't have to do all of the tours these days.
No, we've been training a group of individuals to replace me, and they're doing an excellent job. They were very passionate about what they're trying to do, and I'm delighted about their passion.
Part of our conversation this hour is going to reflect what we learned. WXXI News attended one of those tours yesterday, and we posted pictures. You can see inside some of these bunkers and some of these old storage facilities that are still there, and it's pretty remarkable stuff. If you want to call the program with comments or questions about what's going on at the old Seneca Army Depot on the site, on the roughly, 10,000 acres? Is that right, Dennis?
Altogether, it was 10,500 acres.
10,000.
But the area that we're in is 3,000 acres.
Okay, so if you've got questions or comments, 844-295-TALK. It's toll-free, 844-295-8255, or 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. We're going to work through some of this fascinating history, and this is American history. This is American history that not only took us through decades of time, but as Dennis Money taught us on the tour yesterday, provided all of the munitions for Operation Desert Storm in 1990-1991, Dennis?
Yes, I believe 34,000 tons of bombs came from the Seneca Army Depot to fight the conflict in the Middle East.
Amazing. And Jeff, for you, from an economic development perspective, what I want to talk about before we work through some of the history is this. There were questions about what was going to become of the site. You know, you knew that if the fence came down, the white deer would probably be gone. They would be hunted or vulnerable to predators. And developmentally, you know, somebody has to own it. It's not working as a munition storage anymore, but it's hard to figure out what to do with the site. So just remind our listeners what ended up happening.
So it was a real concern about what to do with the site, because the infrastructure at that property is very limited. And once the Army vacated the premises, they probably hadn't put a whole lot of investment into it for a long, long time. So there was very little that could or has been identified to be able to do on the site. There had been some warehouses that came in over time. There was a law enforcement center that the county built. There was a federal prison that was built on the site. So as many adaptive reuses as could be thought up, was brought to the site, but it still left this very wide swath of land that was infrastructure power poor. And so for many, many years, Dennis and I had talked about having the ecotourism park and conservation area at the site to make money, to drive visitors to this area. And fortunately for us, a gentleman came along by the name of Earl Martin and decided that that was land suitable to expand his very successful and growing business. So a local business owner took title to most of the property that is not owned by other entities at this time. And that's where we are today with Dennis and his group forming this wonderful partnership with this gentleman. And, you know, at this point in time, actually between Hillside Children's Family Center, between the Law Enforcement Center in Seneca County, and between Five Points Correctional Facility, there is about as many jobs as there ever was during the Army when the Army held the facility. But this just is an amazing new venture and one that I think we can all be proud of and will showcase the Finger Lakes region and Seneca County to the world of very eager white deer enthusiasts.
But not just white deer enthusiasts. I mean, it has to be economically viable for Earl Martin to continue with it. So, Jeff, in 5-10 years from now, what's the ideal scenario for what you're going to find in that site?
So a thriving tour ground led by Seneca White Deer and Dennis Money. You're going to see a very hopefully successful and ever-growing business for Mr. Martin. And a part of that will be somewhat of a Mennonite community where there will be restaurants and some very exciting country store type facilities where a Mennonite community can exist.
What about bed and bunkers or bunker and breakfast? Is that possible?
Well, that not... Hey, anything is possible that Dennis Money tells me. I'm convinced of that. And that's a vision for Seneca White Deer, one that I think is a very unique idea, creative. And yes, I absolutely do think there is a market for a bed and bunker experience. And we're really eager to promote that.
Well, there are, Dennis, how many bunkers or however you, what's the term for it? How many are still there on the site?
Well, on the site are 519 ammunition bunkers or igloos, whatever term you like to use. And in our area, which is known as Deer Haven Park, we have probably 150. And more than we need, obviously, but that's all part of the history of the depot. And we're not going to take them down. It's too expensive and it's not worthwhile. And they're just a great addition to the military aspects of the tour.
Yeah, in a moment, we'll get there because on this tour, we got to go inside one of these. And it is, in some ways, surreal. And as Dennis Money said, it's an example of American craftsmanship as well when you think about how well constructed some of these things were. But before we start working through that, let's go back to 1941. Dennis, tell us briefly the story of what was happening on that site and how quickly the depot was built.
Well, as I understand it, the War Department came in early June of 1941. There was a decision being made that the United States was about to go enter into the war in Europe, and the War Department needed a facility far enough away from the east coast of the United States that could not be bombed by the Germans. So it happened, land between the lakes, between Cayuga and Seneca Lake, seemed like an ideal location because it was remote, it didn't have a high population, and it had bedrock that was fairly close to the surface. All good ingredients that were necessary for a depot to be built. So our War Department came in and basically said, Mr. and Mrs. Farmer, and we know you're patriotic, we need your land, and you have anywhere from 3 days to 3 weeks to get out. And many of the farmers had to leave their crops in the field. And some of them were able, fortunately, to remove their homes and move it to other farmsteads. But most of the homes were destroyed. And quickly, the Army came in, and the civilian workforce started to build. And as Evan said, we had over 8,000 men and women building there 7 days a week, 24 hours a day. And within an incredibly short period of time, 5 months, by November 15th, the depot was pretty much in essence built. And that included 519 of the bunkers, 24-mile fence, 100 miles of roadways, and 40 miles of railroads. It was an incredible feat of American will, doing something positive. And we're really proud of that, and we emphasize that in our tours.
It is also just an accident that the white deer ended up there. We're going to get to that in a second here. But Dennis, when we talk about what happened to the people who worked there and to some of those families, I thought one of the interesting things you mentioned on the tour yesterday was look for the daffodils, because people did live there. So there were still structures there, but it's still, to this day, it's hard to sort of see some of those because the bunkers are there, but the evidence of the houses and structures, not necessarily. So tell us about the daffodils.
Well, you have to keep in mind that this area, the depot, was pretty much all agricultural land. So it was wide, had a high visibility. But over time, Mother Nature doesn't like a vacuum. And all of a sudden, trees and shrubs would come in and cover up these old foundations. However, what remained behind were the daffodils. And because so many people planted them in those days. And so this is one key thing that you can look for in the springtime as evidence where foundations could have been. And we're going to be taking a look at that in 2018 and try to identify some other locations, because there is a great deal of interest from people who had great-grandparents that lived there, and they like to come back and see if they can recollect or find some remnants of their grandparents. And so I think this will be another interesting aspect of the tours, or perhaps some special tours, looking for the old farmsteads.
Looking for the daffodils. Just a reminder, if you're on the fence between annuals or perennials at home, you might be planting evidence for future generations to figure out where you are. And on these tours, you get a chance to kind of get some of this history. Again, WXXI News took one of these tours yesterday. If you want to take a tour, you can sign up to do that. How, Dennis?
By going online to SenecaWhiteDeer.org. We have online registration. It's efficient. It's quick. And I think you'll enjoy doing it that way. And we also have gift certificates for this time of year, which are a great gift to give to people that you can't think of what else to give them. So take a look at our website. It's got some beautiful photographs and a lot about the history of the depot as well.
Dennis Money, the president of Seneca White Deer, Inc., telling us the story. And on this tour, you're on a bus. It's just a simple bus. I think there are 20 people on the tour we were on yesterday, just about a full bus. The nice thing is you will kind of drive through these acres. You get exposure to different places. There are bomb shelters that you get to walk through besides some of these bunkers or igloos for the munitions. And then you will probably see a few white deer. I think we saw 7 or 8 on our tour. The nice thing is the bus will stop and you get a chance to take some pictures and see some of them potentially up close. What about you, Jeff? Do you see any white deer in your tour?
We did. I think we saw about a dozen, half a dozen, I think. But also regular brown deer, white-tailed deer as well.
I mean, I feel bad for those deer. Everybody's like, oh, it's a brown deer.
But as you said, it's not just about the white deer. I think Dennis has incorporated all of the wildlife in that property and this tour, and it's a really pleasurable experience.
Yeah, right, so let's get back to the animals in a second, because here's Andy on Twitter. He says, amongst my favorite things about upstate New York, high on the list are the white deer found inside the old Seneca Army Depot. There's almost nothing more majestic than a white deer standing in snow, a giant rack atop its head. I've seen it. Yeah, it is an amazing thing to see when you see it up close, but these deer were not there, you know, they weren't brought in. Well, Dennis, let's talk about some of the rumors. So in the 1940s into the 1950s, the rumor was when the white deer showed up, well, it's the radiation from the bombs that turned the deer white. Or, what did you say? Some people thought maybe they were airlifted from Canada?
Yes, that's...
Those are some of your favorite rumors?
We hear all sorts of ideas and rumors from people that want to tell us how the white deer actually were formed. Some people said they were airlifted from Canada and dropped in at night. Other ones, as Evan said, is that they were caused by radiation mutations. And even some people said they came in from Germany. So that's not true. It's the fact that it's just a biological situation that occurred, because all brown deer carry a white gene for color. And it's usually a recessive gene, but occasionally a male and a female brown deer, when they mate, the white recessive genes become dominant, and the brown doe can have a white fawn. And that's exactly what happened in 1949 when two white fawns were seen. They were immediately given protection by the base colonel. And over a period of time, they mushroom into almost 300 animals of about 10 years ago. And so that's why we consider this as the world's largest herd of white-tailed deer.
But not albino, right?
They are not albino deer. They are brown-eyed deer. Albinos have pink eyes. Generally, they cannot reproduce and don't live very long because of that fact. And so, no, these animals can reproduce. They can mate with brown deer or white deer. And we just hope that they continue to increase in population.
Well, maybe they did mutate because of radiation, but the Army, Dennis, the U.S. Army, to my knowledge, has never confirmed that nuclear weapons were stored there. What do we know about that?
Well, that's very true, and I don't understand why they won't confirm that, but based upon some of the documents that I have received and people that I've talked to, plus being on site there and actually seeing the symbol for the splitting atom inside one of the igloos in the Q area, which is where the nuclear weapons were stored, I would bet my house that there were nuclear weapons there. And the rumor has it there were at one time 1,100 nuclear weapons stored at the depot, including missiles that could transport these bombs to different locations around the world.
So that's it's only a mystery if you want the official on the record from the U.S. Army. But there's enough knowledge out there that among the other things that were stored there, because there were other things stored, that nuclear weapons were among them. And Dennis, you would also know a little bit about nuclear weapons because of a past life that you had and some of the work that you've done. Remind us about that.
Well, I was trained at Oak Ridge, Tennessee, and for a program that the Atomic Energy Commission was supporting called the Atomic World Show. And we spent a whole summer down there training to learn about the basics about nuclear physics, radiation biology, and nuclear power plants. And then after I graduated from that curriculum, I was sent to New York State, and I was one of two men that became the atom men for New York State. And I did that job for 3 years. It was probably the best job of my life at that time. And I would go around at different high schools and middle schools and give presentations about nuclear and atomic energy, and then I would also teach classrooms on the radiation biology and nuclear physics, and spend the entire day there. And it was a great job. And I traveled all over New York State, including New York City, and it was very gratifying. And I had a lot of good stories to tell about that some other time.
Alan on Twitter says, "I was on the board of the Genesee Waterway Center when Dennis was there. Great guy." So you apparently have some fans out there over Dennis's work over the years. And we're talking about the history at the Seneca Army Depot. Again, if you're just joining us, it is 24 miles of fencing, about 10,000 plus acres near Seneca Lake that in 1941 was appropriated by the U.S. Army for the creation of weapons storage. And there are more than 500 igloos or bunkers still there built into the ground. We went in one of them yesterday. How big was the one that we got to go inside on our tour, Dennis?
You were in a standard size igloo, 40 foot wide, 60 foot long, about 12 foot high inside. Some of the igloos were 80 foot long, and those are the ones that housed missiles, and they were located in the Q area. They also had specially designed igloos in the Q that were supposedly atomic bomb blast resistant, and it was because of the shape and their location. So there were other igloos there that had doors that were 12 foot wide, and they housed multiple rocket launchers. So depending on the width of the door, that would give you an idea what could have been housed in there, because the bombs themselves ranged anywhere from 100 pounds to up to 10,000 pounds. And each igloo itself could hold up to 50,000 pounds of weapons.
In there yesterday, you can see some of the pictures that we posted. If you follow me on Twitter, at Evan Dawson, or producer Megan Mack at MMack Media, I found it, kind of eerie. I mean, the bunker itself we were in is all swept out neat and clean and spick and span, and there's nothing in it, and it's very echoey, of course, built into the ground. Jeff, what did you think when you were in one of those?
I got to agree with your assessment. It is eerie. It harkens back to the Cold War era for me anyways. I'm a little younger than some of the veterans that have been around. But talking about the nuclear storage, this area, that particular base, the Army Depot, was the site of some national protests down in the 80s when the women's encampment was there. And, you know, so there were a lot of people that were also believing that nuclear weaponry was stored in that facility. And, you know, being able to go inside that base and have those gates unlocked, a pretty remarkable feeling to know or to think what was once housed there on those grounds.
Yeah, Betsy just wrote to the program and said, I hope you're including the Women's Peace Encampment from the 80s in the history and tour. Does that come up, Dennis?
Yes, I think I mentioned that yesterday. It was 83 to 84, up to 20,000 women spent almost 2 years protesting the alleged storage of nuclear weapons at the depot. And you can catch, it's still on the internet. You can go out there and check that out. And there's lots of photos about what happened there. And it was an interesting time. I remember driving by the depot and seeing razor wire put on top and the bottom of the fence to keep the women from crawling over the fence. And it was also some really funny history between the locals and how they felt about the women being there. And so there was a lot of resentment from the locals about that situation because many of these women came from different locations, especially large cities. And there was oftentimes some verbal clashes about that.
There were also some interesting headlines and articles in the Welcome Center for the tour. You had some old headlines in which writers of articles, newspapers back in, I would assume, 40s, 50s, 60s, but especially in those early times, were speculating, you know, could we get bombed here? Could it happen here? And there were concerns that, you know, because people might say, well, I understand you need the bunkers if you are storing missiles, weapons, atomic weapons, but why do you need bomb shelters? I mean, who is going to be attacking a depot off of Seneca Lake? But Dennis, there were real concerns over the years.
Well, you have to keep in mind that America really didn't have a really strong military presence in the 1940s. We had really a very small army. And there was a lot of speculation about what the Germans might be able to do to us. So to defense that, they built about 26 of these personal bomb shelters for the contractors and the guards to run into in the event that the Germans could actually fly their planes that far inland. But, of course, that did not happen because the Germans didn't have planes with that kind of range. So they've just become, you know, places for sightseeing right now. So they were never utilized, and they're very primitive, as you saw yesterday. And you have to wonder how they could be, in effect, useful at all. It reminds me of the days when I was a kid, when we have air raid drills, and we go out in the hallway and put our hands against the lockers. And when you think back about that, that would be, there was no protection there at all. I mean, it was the state of the art at the time. Same thing with the bomb shelters.
Okay, Jeff?
Well, and the other thing I think could have contributed to that somewhat is right across the street was one of two naval bases for training sailors for World War II. So, and that's now a state park. So our community has such a rich military history, but when you combine what was happening at the weaponry, the Army Depot, plus right across the street having a major military installation training base that was designed specifically to train sailors for World War II, you have two very important installations right next to each other, priority targets, if you will.
Michael on Twitter wants to know, how were the bombs transported to and from the depot?
They were transported either by rail or by truck, usually rail. But also, we haven't mentioned the airfield at the south end of the depot. And that airfield was also used to bring in weapons and or to pick up weapons and take them to the different campaigns. So, and that was a unique airfield because it was 7,000 feet long, one of the longest airfields in the whole country. And it could land the largest planes that we have, the C-5 Galaxies. It also was used or could have been used to land the U-2 spy planes because in the event that the Russians bombed the primary airfields for the U-2s, the depot was considered as a secondary safe landing facility.
And there are MPs who were stationed there. In fact, the MPs got a little bored at times. There were stretches on the tour yesterday where you said, see this nice long stretch here? It was a drag racing strip for the MPs, allegedly, right, Dennis?
That's correct.
Allegedly.
That's correct. And what you don't really know is that the MPs really were enforcing or protecting the Q area where the nuclear weapons were stored. In the conventional area, they had civilian guards there. And the contingent of the MPs ranged from 40 people to up to 200 people when the women's encampment was working on in 1983 and 84. But as they told me, you know, it got pretty dull around there. They were never attacked, and they basically, it was just driving around in their Chevy Blazers and hoping that something would happen. And if nothing happened, then they would make it happen by doing drag racing down the Igloo roads.
Have you had people on the tour who have connections through work or family to that site itself?
Yes, we've had many people who have come and are delighted with what they're seeing, and the fact that now at least a certain significant part of the depot will be preserved to memorialize basically the men and women who worked there and who actually built some of the igloos. So we get a lot of gratification out of that.
Listeners, if you want to call the program with questions or comments as we talk about this remarkable part of our local history, it's 844-295-TALK. That's 844-295-8255. Or 263-WXXI if you're calling from Rochester, 263-9994. Dennis Money is the president of Seneca White Deer, Inc., and Jeff Shipley is the president of the Seneca County Chamber of Commerce. If you're just joining us, here is the story. I mean, we've got this remarkable site right off Seneca Lake that maybe over the years, if you've ever been driving down through the area, you see this fencing that seems to go a long ways, and then maybe you see occasionally white deer just inside the fence line. Well, those white deer are not albino deer, and they have been protected, but we're hoping that they stick around because their numbers have dwindled a little, not to the point of being gone, but there's, the last count in 2015, only about 75. In our second half hour, after our only break coming up here in just a moment, we're going to talk about the deer, the birds, the ecology of the site, and the future plans for that, because there is a lot of work already underway to provide more food and more of a chance to make sure these deer stay here. So just an amazing part of our local history, preserved, and now with a chance to become a permanent part of our history. The tours are happening. You can take a tour. Jump online at senecawhitedeer.org to sign up for a tour Thursday through Sunday. You can get gift cards as well, and it's $30 for adults, $27 for military and senior. Kids 5 to 17 years old, $15 and under that age are free. Let's get our only break, and we'll come right back right here on Connections. Coming up in our second hour, a couple of creation stories around the holidays that, well, they're not what they first appear. The board game Monopoly was not created by a man down on his luck with oilcloth in his basement. It went back to 1903, and it was a woman who wanted to send an opposite message of what we should be doing to celebrate success and wealth. We'll talk about her story was subverted, and then The Night Before Christmas, the poem that launched Santa Claus. That's next hour. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. We're broadcasting from our studios at WEOS, Finger Lakes Public Radio, 89.5 FM throughout the Finger Lakes region. It's always wonderful to be down here today with Dennis Money of Seneca White Deer, Inc. and Jeff Shipley from the Seneca County Chamber of Commerce. Tours open. Just some discussion during our very brief break about people who are already planning to get gift cards for Christmas for somebody saying, boy, I realize that I've got people on my list. I have no idea what to get them. They're going to get a gift card, maybe wrap up a picture of a white deer. Really neat idea, because we had a chance to take the tour this week and not only enjoyed it, but I learned so much from Dennis Money and the people who've put together these tours. And we were on a packed bus, but it was warm enough, and chance to see some of the white deer who are there. And at the last count, Dennis, you were in a helicopter or an airplane back in 2015 looking for an official number of how many white deer are still there?
Yes, John Engel, the owner of Heron Hill Winery, and I snugly fit into a small helicopter.
Who was driving? Who's flying? Who's captaining?
Well, John wasn't really fond of being in a helicopter, and I made a point of saying, well, this is the pilot's first trip, which then made his eyes bug out more than ever. But it was uneventful, except for the fact that we did see white deer, and John had a great time. John and his wife, Josephine, have been significant benefactors of ours. And I wanted to treat him, so to speak, with a helicopter ride, and he had a great time. So we counted roughly 75 plus or minus white deer on the entire 7,000 acres that they inhabit.
So 75 at the last count in 2015. But what was the peak of the white deer population?
Well, when the Department of Environmental Conservation did their last aerial survey, right now probably 9 years ago, they counted about 300. And so there's been a significant loss of white deer, and that's due a lot to, there's been poaching, there's been predation from coyotes, And the biggest factor, I believe, is the lack of quality habitat and food available for the deer in the wintertime, which is the hardest time of the year for any wildlife. And, you know, as I mentioned, Mother Nature doesn't like a vacuum, and she continues to stuff it full of plants. Well, once the plants reach a certain height, they're non-reachable by the deer, or they're non-edible by the deer. And that's what's happened. We have a lot of invasive species now at the Seneca Army Depot, and Earl Martin's going to be taking and developing a program to remove some of those each year, and along with putting in food plots such as, you know, radishes and turnips and corn and soybeans to help the deer make it through the wintertime. So I think that's it.
Well, I mean, we saw on the tour yesterday some of the new plantings already for apples for the deer, which anybody who grows, especially Finger Lakes winemakers, they know, and wine growers, vineyard managers, they know deer like to eat. They like to eat fruit. So you've got a little protective fencing around, but you're going to have also some apples and some snacks for the deer there?
Yeah, Mr. Martin has planted six varieties of standard size apple trees. Standard size being the big ones that you normally don't see anymore because the market's gone to dwarfs or semi-dwarfs. But these indefinitely, probably in 5 to 7 years, will produce some fruit for the deer. And as of yesterday, he's told me that he is going to be planting hundreds of nut trees in the coming spring. So that'll be a great addition because the apples don't last that long in the winter. But nuts, especially acorns, are going to last all winter long. And they can be a key ingredient for the survival of the deer.
The deer eat a lot, by the way. I mean, if it's just buds, how many buds a day?
Well, from what I've been told by wildlife biologists, it's about 4 pounds of buds. And if you look at a bud, like a sugar maple bud, which is one of their favorites, and even if that bud was a quarter inch long, you can think about how tiny that is.
It weighs nothing.
Little it weighs. So they have a tremendous amount of energy exerted to go and find buds to eat in the wintertime.
Yeah, so they're eating a lot, and that's, I guess, starvation was one of the big reasons that drove that population from 300 about a decade ago down to 75. Dennis, you said on the tour yesterday that we were on that the hope is we've leveled off at least or maybe gained a little. I mean, I know you're not optimistic that there's at least 100, but you think that maybe it's still holding around 75 or so?
Yeah, that's my gut feel. I've spent a lot of time in there, plus I have several trail cameras taking videos and photos of the deer. And I'm pretty confident that it's probably right around the 70-ish numbers as far as the animals. But I'm hoping that Mr. Martin and I will be able to do an aerial overflight this coming winter when there's no snow on the ground, and we can easily count the animals then.
And then if you are successful in 5, 10 years, a generation from now, how many white deer do you think can be there?
Well, under good deer management, I would say probably 150. You want to have roughly 30 to 40 deer per square mile. But with enhanced food plots that we're doing, supplementing the natural food, you can actually have a larger number of animals than you would normally find in a natural situation.
That's remarkable. And it's not just the deer who are going to be sort of protected or at least cared for there. There is, we saw a number of big nests. Osprey nests are amazing to see. Jeff's nodding. You saw that too as well?
I did. Amazing sight, as you said, along with the eagle nest.
The eagle's nest, yeah. And by the way, when's the eagle coming back, Dennis? You said like February or something?
The eagles are supposed to come back in February, but they never read the book. And they've been
but
hanging.
February seems cold. Where do they go? What's going on?
They've been hanging around all winter long. There were the male and female were in the nest the other day when we did one of the tours, and I got some nice photos of them. But we've been seeing them like once a week. I don't know where they go the rest of the time. Probably some area where there's open water because they can catch fish and so on. But yeah, they should be starting to nest in mid-February, and these two have been here for about 10 years.
I know nothing about eagles, an embarrassingly small amount. So where would they go in the interim?
They could be going up to Montezuma to see some of their buddies up there.
Oh, of course, the Wildlife Refuge. I should know this because I've been out there, which is also an amazing place,
right,
by the way.
Right.
Okay. But that was neat for me to see. Again, I'm with Jeff. You know, you see these big nests. It's amazing what animals can do. We saw big beavers dam when we were there. And how significant do you think the protection and the interest in the birds? The deer get a lot of attention there, Dennis, but tell me about your thoughts on the bird life there.
Well, we didn't see any turkeys yesterday, but I would estimate there's at least a couple hundred turkeys inside the depot. And they are benefiting from also the food that's being planted for the deer, especially the corn. And so that helps them out. And in turn, the raptors, the red-tailed hawks, the rough-legged hawks, they're going to feast on the turkeys, because the turkeys are going to be feasting on the food. So it's an endless cycle, and it's all part of the natural scheme of things. So that one hand helps the other, so to speak. But you have the turkeys, you have coyotes, a few coyotes, you have skunks. I've seen several skunks over there. You have rabbits, red foxes. I've seen quite a few gray fox, which are not very common. And the other thing about the depot is that it's what they call an important birding area, an IBA. And it's estimated that over 120 species of birds either nest there or migrate through there in a given year. So we're working with Chris Lajewski over at the Audubon Center in Savannah. And Chris is going to be sending up some people to start to do a study as far as who are the resident birds living there within the depot during the four different seasons of the year. Then we'll have a really good up-to-date census of the birds.
And before I get to a couple of listener questions and comments, tell me a little bit also about the cemetery that we saw toward the end of our tour yesterday, Dennis.
The cemetery is called the First Baptist Cemetery of Candaya. Candaya was an Indian term for a village that was located along Seneca Lake before it was basically destroyed by General Sullivan in 1788. And after the war was over, the soldiers came back and formed the white settlement of Candaya. And in turn, being quite religious, they built a church. That church was incorporated in 1795. And surrounding the church eventually became this unique cemetery. I say unique because it contains several colonial soldiers. As a matter of fact, four colonial soldiers, one from the War of 1812, one from the Spanish-American War, and 17 Civil War soldiers. And when you think about the hamlet having maybe 200 to 300 people altogether, to have that kind of numbers of veterans, I think shows their patriotism.
Jill writes to the program and wants to know, what about bringing school groups in for tours?
Ah, good question. Yes, actually, we're working closely with some of the school groups. At South Seneca, for example, they've had indicated an interest in bringing their middle school kids over. And we also have had recent interest from Wells College and Hobart College, bringing in some of their conservation type individual students. So we're looking forward to broadening the program to include those special tours. For example, the Hobart professor wants to emphasize the deer management of the Seneca Army Depot and talk about deer biology. So that'll give me a break from doing the normal tours, and I can get back into my own background, which is wildlife biologist.
On Twitter, Trish says, "We love this place." And a different listener writes to us and says, "Are those bomb shelters still usable in case of a nuclear attack nearby?" Now, again, I'm hopeful that we won't have such an attack, but are the shelters still viable, Dennis Money?
They certainly are, and certainly they're going to be much more beneficial to survival than your typical home because of the way they've been built and the concrete and the steel rebar that was put into these igloos. So, yes, they definitely could be. And there's been some talk about using them for disaster relief command post in New York State. I don't know where that has gone, but they're available.
Jeff?
One of the adaptive reuses of a portion of these igloos is by a company known as Finger Lakes Technologies Group, and they have a backup data storage is what they're being used for companies all around the country to store in a secure location. These are concrete, 3-foot concrete thick enclosures to store their data.
For those who are hearing about what's happening there and this remarkable change, that now there's a direction for this land, that there's leadership, Mr. Martin is there, you've got Dennis Money and the Seneca White Deer Inc. leading the tours. Some may want to volunteer, think about the conservation aspect or other ideas. Are there opportunities to do that, Dennis?
Oh, we'd welcome volunteers. We really did. And actually, some of our tour guides are volunteers themselves. So we appreciate that kind of passion and support. And these are the kind of people that we want to have on board.
What kind of help do you need? Is it mostly with tours? Is it with actual conservation or some of the work on the land?
Well, right now it's with the tours primarily, but eventually it could be other things. For example, we have some ideas about planting some trees around our welcome center, as well as, you know, putting up bird feeders and those kind of things that make it look more natural. So I think there's all sorts of opportunities, plus the fact that you may want to give presentations to different groups. We're getting a lot of calls about from different senior groups and rotary clubs and so on that would like a presenter. So we would train you, and we would welcome your support in that regard.
All right, two questions from Art. He wants to know how long the tours are, and he wants to know if hunting is allowed on that land now that the land is opened up and if the white deer are being protected.
The tours are generally 90 minutes to 100 minutes long. It really depends on what tour guide you get.
And how many white deer you see. Right, because that will slow you down.
Exactly, because every time you see a white deer, the bus has to stop or back up, and people are snapping their photographs through the windows. Regarding the hunting, there was a hunt last year and this year. Wounded Warriors came in and both years and hunted the brown deer. And then it was opened up to a few other individuals for brown deer only. There will not be any white deer hunting for at least 5 years, according to Mr. Martin.
Okay. Jeff, some thoughts on sort of the rules and keeping that everything sort of in place there?
So a very important resource, obviously, as you can hear, for our community and our economy. And we are really delighted to hear Mr. Martin working with Dennis, putting these conservation efforts in place that will preserve, protect, and secure the future of this herd, we hope, for many generations to come.
And before I move to our next listener question, if people want to contact you, Dennis, to maybe volunteer or learn about the tours and what they might have to do, again, just go to the website?
Yes, just go to the website and we'll respond.
And the website is senecawhitedeer.org.
Correct.
senecawhitedeer.org. Joel writes to us and says, the proposed trash incineration of the depot is a bad idea. What's going on there, Jeff?
So very early stages of this. There was just a public hearing held this past week, as a matter of fact, about the trash incinerator project. Very few in this state even. I think it has a long road ahead of it to become a reality, but there's certainly has been a big opinion expressed in opposition to this project.
What exactly are we looking at with the proposal? I mean, how big of a site and what kind of trash incineration are we talking about?
Yeah, so it would be a fairly large operation, hauling in train cars of trash. And, it's certainly more of what the proponents of it have said is it's certainly a cleaner form of disposing this garbage in, you know, as opposed to some of the conventional methods. But still, the science is I don't know that it's fully complete yet. And I don't know that the community, again, we already have a very large trash business located in our community. And I don't know that the community would necessarily be supportive of having two major installations at this time.
Do you take a position with the chamber on it yet?
We have not done so yet. We really just are trying to be in that fact-gathering stage and really learning all sides. So we haven't done that. I suspect that we will probably weigh in at some point in the future.
Does Seneca White Deer take a position on this, Dennis?
I agree with Jeff. We know so little about the project right now. I think it would be kind of crazy to take any stance without having some verified facts about how efficient and learning about the pros and cons of such a facility. So we are remaining neutral.
Okay. Kevin writes to the program and says, Dennis and I have worked together for many years, and I've been an enthusiastic donor to Seneca White Deer. He is, without a doubt, the most tenacious advocate for wildlife and nature I have ever known. No one could ask for a better advocate. In his role with Seneca White Deer, he has shown that tenacity and brought this concept to reality. And so with Dennis, if it can be done, it will be done. That's Kevin Hilton writing to us. So
fantastic. Good man.
Do you agree with that, Jeff?
Not only do I agree with that, I know Dennis is a very modest and humble person, but because of not just this effort, he has done some pretty remarkable things in his time, including the Peregrine Falcon in Rochester for NYSEG. We are honoring him with the Seneca County Chamber of Commerce 2017 Citizen of the Year for all of his outstanding efforts for this endeavor. And so really looking forward to it. And again, I know Dennis is a very modest person, but he has really done remarkable things over his career with as it comes to wildlife conservation.
All right, very nice stuff. Got a few minutes left, so let's just talk about something that Dennis brought up earlier, which is that the white deer who are within those 24 miles of fence at the old Seneca Army Depot are, we think, maybe the largest herd of white deer in the world. And, you know, we know that there are white deer in various places. They can show up anywhere because of, you know, recessive genes sometimes create this. But how do we know, or why do we think, you know, this is one of the largest, if not the largest?
Well, keep in mind, there's like 14 different species of deer in the world. Mm-hmm. And we have done quite a bit of research to check to make sure that our claim is valid. And we know that there are white fallow deer in Ireland, and they're privately owned herds of 35 to 50 animals. But it's a different species, so we're very careful to say it's a white-tailed deer. And we have checked all through North America, and we can't find any other population like that. Now, I know Wisconsin has white deer, but you're going to see white deer in any of the territories that the white-tailed deer inhabit across the country. There's roughly 28 million white-tailed deer in North America, and I get calls and emails all the time from people who have a white deer in Maryland or one in Arizona. What can I do? How can I protect it? And I tell them what I know, because, you know, Wisconsin's the only state where white deer are protected. And we try to do our best to give them some advice on what they can do, but generally they really can't do anything. And it's, the white deer is just an anomaly that happened from that local population. But as I tell them all the time, we have the world's largest herd of white deer at the Seneca Army Depot. Come and visit us.
I would think that the fact that these deer ended up in a place with fencing, number one, gave them a better chance to survive here, because wherever you see white deer, they're probably a trophy for hunters.
Right.
And you probably also benefited from some leadership within that facility early on who said, protect them, Dennis?
Right. Colonel Frank Kemble was one of the main reasons that the white deer were given protection. In the 1940s, brown deer in New York State were few and far between. And so when the two white deer were born in 1949, it was just like an incredible sight. And the colonel said, you know, the deer can't be harmed. They're going to be given full protection. And as the joke goes, you know, if any of you harm those white deer, you're on the next plane to Greenland. And so due to that protection, the number of white deer increased, and eventually they did have a hunting season on white bucks, but not on white does, just to maintain the genetic diversity of the herd itself.
All right, Dennis, so 30 seconds here. This has been a long time coming, as a number of listeners have noted, for you, for this region. You know, and you're already off and running here on tours. You didn't wait. You didn't wait for the spring. Is it surreal to you? I mean, how are you feeling about what's happening on this site?
You know, I really haven't sat down to think about it much. All I know is that we now have light at the end of the tunnel. We're actually making progress. We're actually showcasing the white deer to the people of the world. And that was always my goal. And then the last thing I wanted to say is that the white deer are going to be significant for getting people excited about coming outside to learn about the value of wildlife and habitat. And that, to me, is very important in our day of high tech, or in our days of high technology. We're losing touch with our natural surroundings, and I think the white deer can help to bring them back to Mother Nature, so to speak. You know, as I've told Jeff and other people, you know, a lot of places in the world have great wineries, scenic vistas, great recreation, but only Seneca County has the white deer.
SenecaWhiteDeer.org. The tours run Thursday through Sunday. Check for schedules there, but they run on Thursday, Friday. We know 8, 10, noon, 12, and then every hour from 8 to 2, On Friday and Saturday, they've got gift cards available, and you can do that now. WXXI News took a tour yesterday. Dennis Money, congratulations on it. I know it has been a long time coming, and we'll talk again soon here, but appreciate your time as always.
My pleasure. Thank you so much.
Dennis Money from Seneca White Deer, senecawhitedeer.org, and Jeff Shipley, president of the Seneca County Chamber of Commerce. Thank you, Jeff.
Thank you.
Our thanks to Greg Cotterill and all the folks here at WEOS. We're broadcasting today from Geneva, Finger Lakes Public Radio, 89.5 FM. Here are more connections coming up.